Britain just promised kids would be safe online. Then a BBC covered study says teen Instagram accounts are still riddled with suicide and self-harm content. 30 out of 47 protections, I'm air quoting that, either don't work or disappeared. Meanwhile, Starmer's pitching a shiny new digital ID, sold as a fix for undocumented immigration, but conveniently useful for building the mother of all databases. If the safety tech rather can't protect teenagers, maybe safety was never the point. Maybe it was the sales pitch.
Welcome to Politics is Broken with Brittle Starr and Lisa B. Canadian and global politics unspun. Are you sitting comfortably? Good. Then we'll begin.
Well, hi there. Welcome back to Politics is Broken. My name is Brittle Starr.
My name is Lisa, and today we're going global.
That's right. The music sounds global, though, doesn't it? For those of you listening at home and not seeing the visual, Lisa's just dancing to the theme, basically, which is good.
Grooving.
How you doing, Lisa?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Just fine. Thank you. How's the weather out there in Alberta?
Today's a little chilly. I was out in the garden. I have a cautionary tale for people. I have two very large apple trees. And, you know, apples have been falling. And today I thought, today's the day I'm gonna get my giant extended apple picker and I'm going to bang away at the apples. If you are doing that, don't look up. I pulled a Trump at the eclipse. Yeah, I did. And I got right on the bridge of my nose. So if it's a little extra blue or dented, that's why.
I just want to tell you that every single term used in that story sounded like a euphemism. It's all sounded dirty. It sounded like slang.
That's because it's late where you are.
I'm past the watershed in the UK. I'm currently in the UK right now and having a good time. But before we get to that, I want to just briefly go over the fact that I was at an event called Politics in the Pen, which I've been to twice, by the way. Mm-hmm. I just want you to know. I just want you to don't laugh at that.
Tell us all about it.
Okay, I will. It's called Politics in the Pen. It's by the Writers Trust. It's held at the Chateau Laurier in Ottawa. We spoke about it before on the show. I was invited this year. It was very exciting. Previously, 2 years ago, I got to go because I was a guest of TikToks. And I was used as politician bait. And
just dangled.
They tied a string to my ankle and they'd send me into the middle of the ballroom. And then various politicians would come and talk to me. And they'd pull them in.
Reel them back
in. Pull me in and them, exactly. So this year was a bit special because they invited me as a VIP author, guest author. So I was anchoring a table. There was me and a politician, and my table was the Canadian Telecommunications Association. So there's a bunch of big wigs from that sitting around my table, which was a cool table, I think, for me to be at. That's and they were all lovely
cool.
people.
Very cool.
And the politician I was sitting beside was Rebecca Chartrand, the Minister of Canadian Northern Economic Development Agency.
Oh, nice. So
she was great. She was awesome. She is one of those politicians that you sit beside or get the chance to talk to and you think to yourself, what an amazing person. She's really in it for all the right reasons. She's from Winnipeg. She's working on the Northern economic situation, right, making sure there's like things like food economy and all that kind of stuff, which is fascinating because she said about the food economy, you know, down south, meaning just south of Canada.
Right.
We have cows, we have chickens, all that kind of. We have this whole food economy set up. They don't really have cows or chickens in the north. They have musk ox, you know, that kind of thing. They have caribou, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. So the idea, there's a bunch of regulations in the way of turning that into a food industry, a food economy. So she's working on that, which is great. But I do have something to tell you. There was an incident.
Oh no. What did you do? Did you embarrass us?
I didn't know. Okay. I didn't do anything. The minister, I looked over, she was sitting beside me and I'm trying to be, we're all dressed up. I'm wearing a tux. Yeah. Everyone's all black tie. It's all fancy. We're sitting at our table and I see her reach for my glass of water and she reached for my glass of water. She takes this huge gulp of my glass of water. And I thought, I can't just slap it out of her hand.
No.
Because that would be rude.
Right.
And I didn't want to make her choke or spit it out or panic if I said, oh my God, that's my water. So I waited until she finished taking these huge gulps of water, setting it down. And I leaned over and I said, that's my glass that you drank from. And she went, oh, I'm sorry. I was like, no, And I said, I'm not sick or anything. Are you sick? And she said, no. I said, okay, it's fine. It's all good. So it was an incident that was deftly politicoed by me.
That's how world wars start. I'm just going to say.
Exactly. But I also want to tell another little story from Politics of the Bend. It was a great night. I got to talk to lots of people, lots of political media people, and lots of politicians. It was really fun. One of the politicians I spoke to was Sean Fraser. Of course, Sean is, as you know, really tall. And I started the conversation involuntarily. I started the conversation by remarking on his height mm-hmm. in a way that I'm not going to repeat it here. And there's the picture of us Aww. There. I'm standing on two chairs, by the way, in that picture. And anyway, when I talked to him, I said, you know, we do this Politics Broken podcast. He goes, oh, no, I know, with Lisa. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, yeah, yeah, that's right, Lisa B. And when I want people to know who are listening to this show now that when I told that story to you right before we started recording, your face went so red that it changed the exposure on your camera. Like I'm it's not, going okay. now.
Stop.
Well, the pictures, Owen, our producer, is zooming in on the picture now. And now it's mainly just Sean's face.
Hey, Sean.
God, he looks so adorable.
I think Sean
he?
Is a lovely human being. That's all. And a good father and a good husband.
There's nothing wrong with having a little bit of crush. That's all right. You know what I mean? That's fine.
Okay, it's like I don't too think much
he
feels, now. You need to back him up
He didn't feel
a
threatened.
Bit. Anyway, thanks, Sean.
I don't think
Sean.
He felt threatened.
Thank you, yeah, Sean. I so appreciate it.
Sean was one of the many politicians that chatted and I got a good chance to get a feel for what they do and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. And they're all very respectful of each other and very nice to each other.
That
Spoke
nice.
Again to Scott Aitchison was there as well from the Conservative Party. I think maybe possibly the last sane conservative as far as I think.
I was going to say.
But he was there. That was great. I got a chance to talk to him and yeah, it was good. It was a good time. The meal was okay. The meal was, I mean, my meal, I had a special meal. They asked if I wanted to have the Alberta beef, which apparently was fantastic, but okay. I don't eat beef. I don't eat red meat.
Okay.
And so they said, well, we have a cauliflower steak. And I was like, okay, sure. And then the server found me in the hall and said, we can do chicken if you'd like as well. I said, oh, yeah, that sounds yeah. lovely. That sounds
Better
great.
Than a cauliflower steak, yeah. Sorry.
A little more protein. And... she brought it in and it looked lovely. It was largely great. It was largely good, except it was the kind of chicken breast where you cut it and you're worried you're going to shoot it across the room by accident.
Oh,
like you're like,
no.
Everyone else is like daintily cutting this filet mignon. And I'm like sawing this chicken.
You could have asked anyway. For a steak knife and then that would have added a little bit of ridging to the chicken.
It would have been fun. See, I should have had you in my ear.
You should have had me in your ear. You should have had me at your table with Sean. I'm kidding.
Sean wasn't at my table, but I did see him kneeling down at his table. That's what he has to do.
Right.
He can't even. He sits in his sort of hunches.
Poor back. He's got, anyway.
Anyway, he was lovely. And he did a great job. He was one of the hosts, actually. He was fantastic. Nice. Yeah, he did a really great job. But in other news, of course, as we said, I'm also in the UK currently. And one of the big conversation bits is talking about this digital ID that they proposed in the UK. And what's interesting is that this morning, I arrived yesterday morning, and then this morning I logged into Blue Sky on my phone here, and it immediately popped up with a message saying, we have to verify your age before you can get into Blue Sky. And I was like, oh, because you're in the UK.
Okay.
So that's interesting. Then I went on my laptop and same message pops up and then I have to do an age verification. So I did an age verification with this service called, what's it called? It's called something KWS, Kids Web Services. And it had two ways for me to verify my age. One way was by using my camera, my computer's camera, okay. and it would take a scan of my face and estimate my age based on the scan or a credit card. And I chose the face. I was like, I don't care. Who cares? I'll give you. Sure, you want a picture of me? Excellent. Fantastic. So it scanned my face. I had to match my face to the little frame thing.
Outline, yeah.
And yeah, exactly. And then it said scanning, then deleting scan, then verified. It didn't tell me how old the thought I was, which I was kind of hoping it would.
I don't think you want to know.
I thought it was going to be like a carnival thing where they're going to be like,
Between, exactly.
Like the birthday game or something like that. But it was interesting. And then I did that and I clicked, and then another email came through to my inbox that said, just click here to verify your age. And I was like, well, this is dumb. Like, what have I done? This is silly. Mm-hmm. There doesn't need to be any actual process here. So what's interesting in the UK is with this digital ID program, I guess we'll go back to sort of like the Online Safety Act of 2023, which creates legal duties for platforms to protect children from harmful content, including suicide and self-harm. And empowers Ofcom, which is the Office of Communications, which is kind of like Ofcom is kind of like Canada's CRTC, but they have a bit more scope than the CRTC have. And they laid the child safety codes and guidance in Parliament on April of this year. Services had 3 months to complete the children's risk assessments with the thing fully in effect by summer 2025. So now it's in effect, obviously, because I had to do that thing this morning. What do you think about all this? Like, what's your take on, first of all, let's just talk about the kid aspect of it, as opposed to the digital ID aspect, just the kid aspect. What do we think?
So do you have to do that every time you log in? Or like once you've logged into a device, you're good? Yeah.
I don't know, but I think so. I think it's lied to at least my session, meaning I think it might be tied to my device and the session I'm logging in. Because you're right, if I just log in another time, it's tied to my account, then someone just gives you my account.
Yeah, like for child safety, I just don't, like, there's going to be bypasses, right? And this is what I'm curious about. Like, is it when you go to specific websites, like if you were to go to like an Instagram, let's say, even though you have your Instagram account that you would be logging into, does it ask you to log in? Like, does it ask you to verify your age when you're logging into like an Instagram or something like that? Because if it's on the device, what if an adult leaves their device and then a child, like, I just don't understand how this is going to work. And clearly it's not.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But it seems odd to me.
It seems like there's a lot of workarounds, which is concerning, because it's like they should go for it or not go for it, I think. But let's see, according to BBC in September of this year, so this month, researchers, the Cybersecurity for Democracy and Child Safety groups, including Molly Rose Foundation, tested teen accounts and found that 30 out of 47 Instagram safety tools were substantially ineffective or no longer exist. Only 8 out of 47 worked effectively. Meta disputes the findings, but the empirical gaps are damning.
Meta said no.
Meta was like, not us, man. Nope. It's not our fault.
Not
The Children's Commissioner for England blasted Ofcom's child safety measures as too weak, accusing the watchdog of prioritizing tech firms over children, which is interesting because I find it weird with the digital ID thing in general, which we'll get into more as it concerns adults and stuff, but with kids as well, I think it's very, very difficult to do something that's not going to be easily circumvented.
I mean, I feel like things that you're trying to prohibit kids from seeing have existed, and certainly I'm sure it's more prevalent now. But shouldn't, and I don't know, I mean, you're the one in Britain, I don't know. Shouldn't there be more on the back end to just like close the websites that are of concern? Like if there's these websites, and we know there are, there's like blog things, and we see it all the time, that have really disturbing information or imagery or things like that. I'm not talking about your regular porn. I'm talking about like, you know,
right, fancy porn.
Well, bad stuff, right? And and kids have always found that. I mean, there was that when I was a kid before, like, you know, the internet was really the internet. So I just don't understand how this is supposed to work. Like, if it's a safeguard, like you have, you know, on your TV and things like that, where kids can only access certain things, or on a device where they can only access, I guess, pre-approved websites, things like that. kids are smart though. And the people creating this content are trying to, I guess, reach kids. And there's so many different things wrong with this, but they're always one step ahead of a government response or, you know, an organization's response, because they've already done it. And governments and organizations then have to react to what's already been done. So they're always ahead of it. I mean, I'm not opposed to children's safety. Don't get me wrong. I just don't know if this is a false sense of security where parents might think, yeah, my kid's good, and clearly not.
Yeah, I think there's, I think it's a really good point. I think to me, you know, recently I overheard a parent telling their child to show them a video that was posted everywhere about, it was the assassination, the murder of Charlie Kirk. And they said to their kid, hey, go get your phone and show us this video, show your uncle this video. And, or whatever, I don't know if it was an uncle, this other adult, this video that they were talking about. And I thought, well, that's not good. This, because I mean, my point at the time as well as, you know, it used to be really only snuff films used to be really hard to find and only really for weirdos.
Yeah.
And now they're everywhere. It's just a scroll on Twitter. You'll see someone getting offed for sure. Mm-hmm. In an accident or something like that type of thing. And, so my thought is, you know, I appreciate the idea that we want to have something to deter kids from consuming this content. I don't think there's any need for a 14-year-old to know or to see rather that video. No. There's no, I don't know if there's any benefit. In my mind, I can't possibly fathom any benefit that would happen with that. You can't shield your kids. You can't, you know, protect them forever. But at the same time, you shouldn't make it too easy. Mm-hmm. Like I said, with snuff films. But to me, it sounds like it's just a caveat. It sounds like it's just a disclaimer, a indemnity by the tech companies to say, well, we've washed our hands. Like, I'm wondering what the legal perspective is on it as far as, like, you know, we need verification if something terrible happens. Like, this, we're talking about the digital, the kids' age thing for protecting them from self-harm. And that's a good thing, but it's also, is it really, am I being too cynical by thinking it's just a case of like someone who's in a social media platform going, listen, we did our part. We made them click a couple of buttons.
Well, and that's what I'm wondering, right? Because clearly they're not working, right? There's workarounds, kids are smart, they're going to figure it out. But if a big tech company can say, you asked us to do this, we put this in place, it's not our fault that, you know, a kid figured out how to get past it. Does that alleviate any responsibility and accountability should something bad happen? I mean, obviously there's websites and things where there's like, you know, it's behind a paywall and stuff, but we've all heard the stories about the kid who bought like $5,000 worth of Roblox bucks, right, from their parents' credit card. So like,
sure,
kids will find a way to get past something if it's something they really want to see. I think it has to be a more holistic approach to it.
Yeah.
I think it's just a false sense of security for parents. I'm gonna get yelled at. To think that other people are doing the protecting of your children. And I get it, you know, here's your iPad, here's your phone, go have a good day, I'm making dinner. But I think it also needs to be, like, the conversation needs to be a big part of it too, right? Of like, what are you looking at? Or, you know, if you see something disturbing, like, it's okay, we can talk about it, like that kind of stuff. But I don't think that's happening.
Well, I think you're right. I think you make a really good point by saying that, you know, it could for some parents kind of be a, well, that's that taken care of. The same as the social media platforms. Someone else is taking care of this. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about it. And that'd be foolish, first of all, to think that because it's big tech that's doing it.
Yeah.
And it's... I'm not sure exactly what the solution would be, apart from exactly what you said, of being more involved as a parent. And I know that that's easier said than done. Sure. I know that, like, my thing when our boys were younger and people would ask about it, I'd say, well, I try to be everywhere the boys are. I try to be everywhere the kids are. That sounds terrible saying like that. I try to go, like, I want to be, if they're on a certain platform, I want to have some idea what else is on that platform.
Sure.
I can't directly control what they do on the platform or whatever, that's up to hopefully them making good decisions. And luckily, you know, both boys have been pretty good, I think. I'm just guessing. I'm sure they have. The idea was if they were on a social media platform, as a parent, I would suggest, if your kids are on a social media platform, I would suggest you're all on that platform as well. So you know what's mm-hmm. happening. Mm-hmm. So that when terrible things happen, like the video of someone getting shot happens, you can go, listen, I know this video is going around. Don't, try not to watch it.
Yeah.
Try to just scroll past because it's not worth watching. You'll make you feel, it'll do terrible things to your head. So don't do it.
But I think those conversations need to happen long before an event happens, because social media is instant. Right. And so,
yeah,
the conversations need to happen before kids are ever going on to these platforms. And the thing is that, I mean, on social media, we see it all the time, especially like on a platform like TikTok or even Instagram. There's some content creators like that obviously use their children. I was going to say exploit their children for content. Right. And so,
yeah,
like that's dangerous. Number one. But I think all those conversations have to happen like before you're even given the kid the iPad or the phone, or when they're at an age where you know that their curiosity could potentially lead them to, you know, scroll here and go there, because there's no way you're going to know everything that's going on any platform. I mean, it depends. No. Like I think of Twitter and the pre and post era of Twitter. Like it's almost terrifying to open Twitter at any point in time, because like I tend to mostly look at political things, but there's some stuff sure. that comes across my feed and I'm like, how in the hell did I end up here? Right. Yeah. So, I don't think the government or these measures that have been put in place are the end all solution for everything. I think if they work, I think it's a good start. Knowing the kids are a lot smarter than a lot of the adults that are handing them the phones, I think there needs to be more conversation, and there needs to be more people blocking those damn websites that are just horrible. But yeah, sorry, I can go on forever on this.
So it's like a bit of a moderation thing, you mean? Like more moderators on your Facebooks and Twitters and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, or like, you know, I think of you know, on TikTok especially, which I love, don't get rid of it in Canada. But like if someone makes a comment or something and you as the person receiving the comment view it as, you know, harassment or what have you, like the reporting systems for those kinds of things don't make any mm-hmm. sense at all, right? You can't put a poop emoji in your comment, but you can say some pretty nasty stuff and it doesn't get flagged. So I don't know if there needs to be more moderation on these sites. But it's not just the major social media sites. There's the Google searches, right? Yeah. Which can lead you down a rabbit hole that it just takes a click to get there. And that's why I'm saying I think these conversations need to happen of understanding that children are going to be curious and they're going to be looking for things either intentionally or unintentionally, but they may end up in a place that you don't want them to be. And you can't just depend on, you know, them putting in their age and that's going to take care of everything for them.
You know, I'm starting to think that parenting is tremendously difficult.
Right? It's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. It's too much. it's too much. But I think it's a good point. I think, you know, especially when you're talking to your kids about they're wanting a phone or whatever and they want to get on an account, or you're going to talk, even if you're thinking they want a device and you're like, they're probably going to get an account. Even before that, if they just a computer at home or something. I think it's good to remind parents and good to remind kids that it's the big bad world out there. It's like they dropped you in the middle of Manhattan, dropped you in the middle of London, anywhere. It's like, this is not, there you go. Everything awesome in the world is here. Mm-hmm. Everything terrible in the world is also here. And you kind of have to have the, you know, if you're dropping your kid off, there's a big hubbub about that article about the woman who took her 9-year-old and dropped them off in somewhere in New York or something and said, get home on your own.
Take the subway. Good
luck. It was terrifying. But hopefully, and apparently the parent did, gave them a little bit of street smarts of like, do this, do that. Don't do this. Don't talk to these people. Talk to this person if you need help or whatever, that type of thing. So that was, I mean, still lucky. I still wouldn't do it, but
No.
But that idea of, you know, getting street smart except for social and the internet.
Well, and I think it's, I mean, I don't know. I think like when I was a kid, we had the stranger danger talks in school, right?
Yeah.
And so everybody was scary, right? Everybody didn't trust anybody. Yeah.
Turns out that was right.
Right? Yeah, no. And now I think there's a lot of, well, we don't want to scare children, right? So we're not going to tell them like bad stuff. And it's like, no, like you don't have to make it a horror movie before bed, but like they also need to, they gain the knowledge from you, right? And from the things that they see. So I think, like I said, it's good to have protections in place if they're working, but I don't think you can depend on that as a means of protecting your kids. Like that's still a parenting issue. I'm going to get feedback. Well, I know I'm going to get feedback. I'm sorry.
You can direct your letters to exactly. PO Box. But just, you know, in talking about one of the evils of social media and the internet in general, one of the terrible things, of course, is anonymous trolls and and the anonymity of the internet can cause a lot of problems. When people are accountable for what they say, they're usually a bit more careful with their words. Mm-hmm. When they can have an anonymity, they can be a bit more free about what they're saying. They can say some terrible things. They can threaten people.
Yeah.
They can do all that kind of stuff, which you and I both know. However, that's also one of the biggest benefits of the internet is that you can safely search it for information that you need that you wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable searching for in your own name. I'm thinking about even
what
like
more serious
things.
What are you thinking about, Stuart?
trying to make a serious post. The example that springs to mind of the serious use of that is you know, like spousal abuse or something. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to be saying your name and logging in and having a trail following you back if you're looking for women's shelters or something like that. Mm-hmm. It could escalate the issue and make things worse. So it's a tricky one. Mm-hmm. Now, here in the UK, Keir Starmer, Prime Minister Keir Starmer, is pushing for a digital ID, a digital ID for immigration, which will be called, and I throw up a little bit in my mouth when I hear this, Brit card.
Yep.
It is so, I don't know if you've ever been to the UK, but so when you go to the UK and you go to one of these like American restaurants, like I'm in Glasgow currently, and there is a TGI Fridays on Buchanan Street, and it has been there for over 30 years because it was here when I lived here.
Yeah.
And it is like the, I want a taste of America. That's what I want. I want to feel like an American, and I go there. That's fine. Listen, do your thing. That's great.
The novelty.
But this, the name Brit Card just sounds like that restaurant. It sounds like, nah, man, it's called Brit Card, dude. Or rather in English, nah, it's called Brit Card, dude. I'm an American. And it just sounds very Trumpy to me,
which is
creepy. But anyway, so Starmer is pushing mandatory digital IDs for people working in the UK, branded the Brit Card, pitched as a tool to curb illegal employment. Pitched as a tool to curb illegal employment and secure borders, with rollout discussed in July 2029. Government briefings have been floating a digital wallet on smartphones carrying personal data, photo, name, date of birth, nationality, residency status. Critics, of course, warn a centralized backend to cross-reference all that data is a hacker magnet. And I agree. I just don't trust them to handle it well.
I you know, Keir, you disappoint me so much all the time.
Every time I see his name, I think to myself, I see him picking up those papers with Trump beside him, and it's like, dude, don't, you're the prime minister. You don't have to do that.
I know.
Don't do that.
I
just
know.
Be cool. You got great hair. You got black rimmed glasses. That's all you need in this world.
Spoken from someone who knows.
Exactly.
You know, I don't know how we're back at digital ID because, you know, during COVID, there was talks about digital IDs. And even before then, And people lost their minds. And I know people are going to say to me, but you know, you had your VEX status on a digital ID. Fine. Nothing good can come of this, I don't think. Like, that's the worry. It's a weird thing to think that someone having a card is going to curb migration or immigration in some capacity or the ability to work. Because you're going to have those employers, I guess, that will be more than happy to take somebody who's not eligible to work because they can pay them less. There's no benefits, right? Like, there's all those kind of things.
Yeah.
So I don't understand what this is for. And I'm not like a conspiracy theory person, but it feels like this is the start of things that shouldn't happen.
It feels like the thin edge of the wedge, doesn't it? Yeah. It feels like that. It's like this is a little bit of a slippery slope that we're going to be on. And it's going to be just this reason at first, and it's going to be other reasons later. And then I think, again, my big problem with it is I'm a fan of accountability. I'm a fan of, you know, people knowing who people are for certain things, for access, for eligibility, for whatever. It's like, sure, you should... I'm a big person, a big believer in that idea of you should be able to be accountable to who you are. However, I also severely do not trust any government to properly secure and maintain a connected database that's cross-referenceable. No, that's not a word. You know what I mean? That can be cross-referenced. I'm so tired.
I know.
And you can get so much information in one single spot, and that seems horrendous. It's like a terrible, terrible idea. Cybersecurity experts, sorry, I'll just add a little bit here before you go on. Professor Alan Woodward said that he warned a centralized system paints a huge target for attackers. Civil liberty groups fear surveillance and exclusion of vulnerable people. Public resistance to the idea is massive, with petitions against the plan exceeding 1.6 million in signatures as of 27th of September. So. People don't like it.
So so they're putting photo, name, date of birth, nationality. I'm assuming they're going to put sex on there as well.
I guess so.
So my question, I guess, just thinking ahead, is that sex at birth? Because what does that do to the transgender community, right?
Sure.
That's just another marker.
Yeah.
For them, which could be dangerous. I mean, it's weird because, I mean, in Alberta, Danielle Smith wants to put citizenship on our driver's licenses. And that's to secure voting integrity and all that kind of stuff. Is it? Like, I don't know that anybody that sees your driver's license needs to know what your citizenship is. There's always a risk, right, of you losing it and then your information is there. The same thing applies here. Like, I feel like we've been here before. Haven't we been here before? Didn't they try and do this before?
They did, in fact. It was actually in 2006 they tried to do this before. Identity Cards Act 2006, the Labor government introduced biometric ID cards tied to a national identity register. It was scrapped in 2010. The Conservative Liberal Democrat Coalition repealed the act and destroyed the database. Hang on to this story. This is fantastic. They destroyed the database and framed it as a victory for privacy. The reasons that it failed, it was seen as Orwellian, of course. Mm-hmm. There was massive cost overruns, apparently ballooning to £5 billion, so $10 million. There's public mistrust, of course, and refusal to adopt to it. The early prototypes of the UK ID card had over 50 categories of data linked to each citizen. And when the database was dismantled in 2010, this is my favorite part. When the database was dismantled in 2010, the drives were literally destroyed by shredding, melting, and grinding. So this is just a bunch of external drives.
In someone's back room.
With everybody's stuff on them. And they're like, we got to grind these up. And I'm glad they ground them. That's great. But I mean, I have so many problems with how government runs things. And that, I think the reason is it's just the nature of government, especially a democratic government, is because you've got different people coming in at different time. They've got different experience levels. They've got different responsibilities. They've got different scope of expertise. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they get shoved into positions where they don't have any expertise. And then the next guy's in, they're left. There's lots of loose ends.
Sure.
Basically.
Sure.
And that's the dangerous part, I think, to me. But here's my other big reason that I don't like them, okay, which is shocking to me. And this was in The Guardian. Let me see if I can find it here. There we go. Apparently, Starmer was the special guest on stage at a corporate event in London for NVIDIA, who make, of course, computer chips.
What is NVIDIA? I was going to say.
Yeah, exactly. So my big problem is, it's like, who are we going to trust with this information? Regardless if it's the UK or Canada or the US or whoever who's doing this asinine idea. Mm-hmm. It might be good in principle. It might have the good intentions, maybe. But we'll see.
What did they say about the road to hell?
Yes, exactly. Smooth and gold. But my problem is the corporate interests that are involved in these IDs, digital IDs. Who's storing this information? So, for example, the Blue Sky login age verification I did this morning was from Kids Web Services. That's based in London, which is great, I guess, which is okay. At least it's in London. But you get into these larger databases, managing them and controlling them, and it's going to be outsourced, or it's going to be contracts given to companies that might be American. Mm-hmm. They might be some other country, probably American though, like NVIDIA or something that's going to be involved. I'm not saying they're going to be involved, but like that type of level of company.
Right.
And they're, huge American interests. And I'm like, why? That freaks me out. Like, why are we giving our information away so easily? We're just handing it over. All the stuff that they worried about TikTok being shut down, rather wanting to shut down TikTok because of security risks.
Yeah.
So we're just going to, in the UK, they're just going to package it up and they're going to just give it to people.
Well, and I think we need to remember the government generally has all of this information, right? Anyway, this isn't new. But I find it weird that you're going to have it on an app on your phone. What happens with people that don't have phones?
I think what's weird about that is I think it's just assumed everybody does now.
Right.
And like, I think it's
not everybody does.
Not everybody does. I mean, I think a huge percentage of people have a phone for sure, but it's not cheap to have a phone.
No.
To getting a phone, you can maybe get one for free if you sign up for a contract, but to sign up for a contract, you have to have a job. You have to have,
you need the ID.
Exactly, to get a job.
Damn it. This can't just be for like immigration though. Like, is this because it's the topic of the day and this is going to be some way that we're going to protect UK jobs for UK citizens? Like, this has to be, there has to be other steps that are coming along, right? So is this going to be used as like your passport now? Is this going to be used as your ID to apply for, I don't know, various services? Like, it just seems very microchippy to me, which is funny because, like, I know, like, what were all the civil liberties groups with this? Right? Where are they? Honkers now? Do they have honkers in the UK? I don't know, but
they're called tutors.
They're called because they're so proper. Yeah. Pinkies up.
That's their t-shirt slogan for this anti-digital ID campaign is pinkies up.
Pinkies up. I just think it's risky to have everybody's information on an external hard drive in someone's back room in their home. Because that's how I envision it. There's too much risk. And especially with the political climate in the world right now. Not that it's ever been Yeah.
That's the whole point. And as producer Owen just pointed out to us, is that, of course, this is, there's great resentment towards this plan for digital IDs. There's great opposition to this plan for digital IDs. But at the same time, Nigel Farage is leading in the polls, mm-hmm, which is bonkers. Mm-hmm. I think because Keir is picking up Trump's papers too much.
Yes.
And so there is that potential for serious anti-immigrant positioning by the government.
Yeah.
In which case they've got a list. I mean, technically they should have a list anyway, but they've got a list of everybody's like, oh yeah, this person, this, we want to get rid of everybody that matches these check boxes. And now we know exactly where they are because of the digital IDs. And it's frustrating to me because I know that, there's no national ID card in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
We use typically with Last for ID, we use a driver's license,
right,
or a provincial photo card for getting booze or renting cars, I guess, or not obviously renting cars, but that type of, whatever you need ID for, you can use those two things for. And of course, your passport is like the top level national ID that you can give places. Apparently in Canada, we briefly debated a national ID in the early 2000s after 9/11, but opposition to it and cost killed the program. Your SIN number, your social insurance number, is often mistaken for an ID number.
Yeah.
But legally, it's only for work and government benefits. Like, I've tried to use my social insurance number before as ID, and then people are like, no, you can't use that. No. I don't even want to see it.
Get out of here.
Get out of here, kid. In 2021, Ontario scrapped its digital ID rollout, citing privacy concerns and poor timing during the pandemic. So yeah, I mean, I think that it is literally an all your eggs in one basket type of situation. Yeah. It's like, why would we do this? There's a really great quote that was, when we had a web development company for about 10 years, we hired our first employee who was, well, no, it wasn't our first employee, it was our first full-time employee. And we hired her as a tech manager, named Amy. She's fantastic. But one of the first questions I asked about our office computers, we had, you know, customer information and all that kind of stuff on these computers. And I said, you know, how can we guarantee that none of our office computers are going to be hacked?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, it's easy. All you have to do is disconnect them from the internet, which of course may have rendered them all useless to us. But her point being was that as soon as it's out there, it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's too late to get it back. It's gone. You've given access. As soon as you're connected to all the amazing things that the internet has to offer, you're also connected to all the terrible things. All the amazing things that having a digital ID database would offer also opens you up to all the horrible things it could offer as well.
Sure.
And that's the difficult part. It's like, you know, we want to keep kids safe, obviously. We want to make things like, you know, sharing health information is something I think is, I remember being in a hospital in Vancouver and them having to like specially send over all the records from Ontario to Vancouver and then Vancouver back to Ontario. And it's like, wow, it'd be so much easier if they just pulled up, oh, it's this guy. Here's all his information.
Right.
And you could probably, you know, save lives in a sense by doing that kind of information. But at the same time, the expense might be too much, meaning that the risk might be too much.
But like for things like that, I don't have a problem if there was a centralized database like for health interprovincially that is run by someone somewhere. It's the bringing of all this information together in one place, I think, is problematic, because what happens, you know, you click on the app and it brings up all your stuff. Now, I'm assuming this would just based on what Kier wants to do. It's like you apply for a job. They say, okay, can we see your Brit card? And then they
sorry, can you try to say it one more time?
Brit card. Same response. And then they tick a box, you know, for government purposes that, you know, Brit card has been checked. But at some point, if this exists, at some point it's going to be expanded out. And so what happens, you know, I try to put in Canadian perspective. You get pulled over by the cops and they're like, well, we want to see your ID. And so you bring up your digital ID, your CAN card. And then, I know, right? Just as bad. But it has like information that isn't pertinent or relevant or shouldn't be seen by just, you know, whatever schmo anybody wants to see it, right? Yeah, and that's the slippery slope that I think it's... And I mean, how many times have we in Canada been like, oh, there may have been a security breach, right? Like your Air Miles card like, or,
was it,
yeah.
Was it, what's it called? Dynalabs or something like that? They had the security breach as such and a bunch
there
of information.
May have was one. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that happens all the time. And as someone who's, you know, been in charge of servers before, it is almost impossible to stop people from accessing anything that's connected to the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not quite as easy as it shows you in the movies. It's not like we're in. It's not quite that easy, but I mean, it's essentially impossible to stop everybody from getting in to get whatever information they want. Is it illegal? Absolutely, sure. It's illegal. But if you're putting it
all in one place on a plate for somebody, it might be worth it for them to try and do it, you know? I don't know.
And it was Ohm's stating, clarifying, thankfully, it's Life Labs, not Dynalabs.
Oh, Life Labs, sorry.
Life Labs, yeah. So yeah, I think there's something about making it a bit too easy for the bad guys, which concerns me.
Yeah, and I'm going to say that this, because I feel like it was tried or it was discussed in the past. Everyone was like, no. Now we're going to try and do it a little bit more fancier now. It sounds rushed. It doesn't sound like it's been really thought out. And all the consequences, the pros, cons. It sounds like Brexit to me. So maybe we just take a step back.
Let's take a breather.
Figure out what your plan is. Educate people on the pros and cons so that, you know, an educated decision can be made about it. But
I agree. And I want to clarify that the term Brit card, if that was just a card you could get that would get you discounts at Greg's or Pret.
Free sausage rolls once a month.
Yeah, exactly. You'd be like, you know what? I would be the most awesome name in the world.
Right?
I would love Brit. I would be like shouting about the Brit card every day. But because it's tied to this, and I think it's tied to, it could so easily be used for nefarious purposes. I just think it's not, I'm not a fan of it. Not a fan of it at all. So what's interesting is that there's two narratives, of course. There's protecting kids and there's securing borders, but both cultivate identity plumbing, which is a term I've never heard before. Verification, linkage, and audit trails, which is spooky to have it called identity plumbing, but it's a very apropos term.
It's all the pipes that go everywhere.
That's I'm familiar with plumbing.
There you go.
I picked up on that analogy right away. They can be repurposed. If teen protections don't work, though, yet state ID races ahead, what's the system really optimized for? Like, what are we doing this for? And I think that's the bigger question is, like, what are we doing this for? Is it going to offer any sort of, with the Brit card, is it going to offer any actual benefits or to just make it easier to thwart people? Not even thwart people, to impede people.
I think it's just a Band-Aid. It's a look at what we're doing and this is going to solve problems, much like, you know, the safety for children. It's like, well, we're going to implement all these things that don't work, but it's that sense of security that someone else is looking out for me or for my children or for, you know, employment and immigration. And I don't think it's going to do anything except put people at risk.
There's some sentiment that it's just being used to win favor, right, from the Nigel Farage more right-leaning crowd, meaning it's a bit of an appeasement and to sort of bring in that crowd. I don't think that down that path no victory lies. I think it's not good. I think the idea of saying let's head down a path that's going to make it easier to accuse and make life difficult for vulnerable communities, meaning whether that be trans or whether it be immigrant or whatever, it seems to me too obvious that it's not going to be a good direction for any country to take.
I think it's going to backfire because I think the right side that would be concerned with this immigration thing would only want the cards for other people. I don't know that they're going to want these cards for themselves. They're more of an other.
As you're saying that, I'm thinking back to when I was in the UK in June and I was at a pub and it was the one of the rallies for the, you know, the white nationalists essentially. Mm-hmm. And there was a table full of guys beside us who were doing lines of cocaine. And this was a nice pub, lines of cocaine off the table and actually absolutely hammered. And just really, I wouldn't say if these guys were offered up to other countries, this is the exact type of people you would say Britain was not bringing their best not sending their best. Mm-hmm. They were more than a little rough around the edges, but they were also at the same time, they all had, I'm sure they all had homes, they all had cars, they all had all that kind of stuff. There's nothing, they had nothing physically wrong with them. But those guys thought just because they were white and straight, they were, that's it. They were the best. And it was, it's, I get concerned about the idea of, you know, like these, I'm not get concerned. I find it impossible that these guys are going to be like, yeah, sign me up for a national ID card.
Yeah, I'd like to be carded. That's exactly what I want. Yeah, no, I don't think
so. Hey, let me finish this. Let me just bump this line off this pub table and I'll fill out the rest of my digital ID card.
So anyway, That's a no bueno.
So we got the law, the codes, the age checks, and the press conference, but teens are still seeing terrible content, self-harm content. And while that fails loudly, a national digital ID quietly powers up, sold as border control, designed for everything. If safety was the goal, you'd measure that what kids actually see. If control was the goal, you'd build an ID that reaches into work, welfare, driving, tax. Which one looks like it's working? I'm not sure. I mean, it seems like the kid one is not working that well. And so the national ID one is not going to be received very well, and it's not going to work well either. It's just not going to do it. It's not going to happen. Well, there you go. Well, listen, I want to thank you for watching and or listening to Politics is Broken. I am going to go to hopefully Paisano Pizza across the street here in Glasgow and get some dinner. It's 9 o'clock for me. That's the time difference. If you're listening on Sunday morning, it is that severe of a time difference that it's Saturday at 9:03 p.m. But yeah, thank you so much. Make sure that you subscribe, follow, all that kind of stuff on your favorite podcast platform. You can also find us at brittlestar.com. Paid subscribers get to see the video. They get to see the exposure changing on Lisa's camera when we mention Sean Fraser's name.
I hate all of you right now.
Oh, yeah. Lisa? Yeah, Lisa B? Yeah, yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, listen. Tell her I say, hey.
Hey.
Hey, listen, everyone. Thanks so much for watching and listening. We'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Politics is Broken with Brittle Star and Lisa B. The audio version of this podcast is produced by Owen Reynolds for the Podcast is Broken Network. Remember to like, follow, subscribe, and comment. And don't forget to check out BrittleStar.com for more.